Okay, good evening, everybody. It's 7 o'clock. We'll start the regular Town of Discovery Bay CSD Board meeting. If I could ask everybody to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Can I get roll call, please?
Roll call has been taken and let the record reflect that all members are present.
Thank you. Okay, this is the time for public comments. This is the public's opportunity to speak to the board about any item that's not on the agenda. While we can't reply to you, we are listening as well as town staff. Is there any public comment?
Yes. I'm not sure if I'm in the right order, but this is Frank Morgan. Am I good to go?
Go ahead, Frank.
Okay. Well, thank you very much this evening for allowing me to take a few minutes to talk about an issue that involves the Caltrans delineators out on Highway 4 at the entrance of Discovery Bay Boulevard. I want to preface these comments by saying that my involvement in this is just strictly as a resident trying to help in any way that I can. I noticed that the Town of Discovery Bay has been spending a lot of time and effort on beautifying Discovery Bay Boulevard. It's looking a lot better in the entrance with hardscape and landscape and so forth. And it came to mind that I've heard from several people that, you know, they wish we could do something with the delineators out there on Highway 4. So my comments are being related to two specific topics, the aesthetics and then one of safety. So first off, the aesthetics, when I first saw those delineators go in a couple years ago, it seems like, I thought they were temporary. I worked in government for cities and counties for 32 years, and roads was my purview in some of those areas. And we would do that to establish a traffic pattern and see if our solution would work for what we were trying to fix. And then if it did, we'd move to a more permanent type of resolution. Well, that never seemed to happen with the cones out there. And so as we beautify the grand entrance of Discovery Bay, as someone's pulling into Discovery Bay, I mean, they're seeing like, almost looks like a Caltrans storage area for cones, for delineators. And that's nothing against Caltrans. And I tell you, I appreciate all they did and working with the town to try and find a solution a couple of years ago. I fully understand the background on that and that how it went back and forth, and they tried to accommodate us the best way that they can. But hopefully my approach is a different one. It's a few different ideas and probably with some different new people involved on the Caltrans end. So what I did to start the ball rolling, as I called Assemblyman Frazier's office, knowing that he was in charge of the transportation for the state, and I figured Highway 4 being a state highway would fall under his purview. His office was kind enough to refer me to Nicholas Tsai at Caltrans District 4 of External Affairs, and I talked to him, who has direct oversight over that intersection that I'm talking about. And in explaining to him some of the issues involved with the aesthetics and a safety issue I'll bring up briefly in a minute.
Hey, Frank.
He was more than...
Frank, I'm sorry to interrupt. You only have 3 minutes, but if you want, can you sum this up in the next 15, 20 seconds?
Yeah. Did I already burn through 3 minutes?
You did.
Wow. Okay, sorry about that. All right, so bottom line is Caltrans is willing to take a look again at that situation out there to see if we can do something that's more aesthetically pleasing to the entrance. And so Mr. Tsai sent me an email and requested a letter from the town requesting that Caltrans take another look at it, and that they'd be happy to do it. And he also supplied a name of the assistant district director, Deanna L. Tanguani. And so all, you know, what I'm looking for is to sit down and work with the town and or any of the board that's that would like to do that or that's appointed to do that, so we can draft a letter. We could send it to Caltrans and we could ask them to relook at the situation and see if anything could be done. And with that, you know, I'd be happy to answer any questions. I don't want to take any more time, but, you know, that's it in a nutshell.
Thanks, Rick. At this point, we can't have any back and forth dialogue, but if you want to contact Mike Davies, town manager, tomorrow, I'm sure he can start the ball.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else in the public that likes to address the board, that wishes to address the board? Okay, hearing none, I will close public comments.
Chair.
Okay, Andy, thank you. We'll move to the consent calendar. Does any board member have any item they want to remove from the consent calendar? Okay, get a
move motion. To approve.
Second.
All in favor? Obviously, roll calls.
Director Graham?
Aye.
Director Callahan?
Aye.
Director Porter?
Aye.
Vice President Graves?
Aye.
President Gatto?
Aye. Motion carries. Okay, we'll move on to the area agency reports. Item D1, do we have a member of Jim Frazier's office in the audience?
Good evening, you sure do. It's Jen Swalenick with Assemblymember Frazier's team. And I did just want to say that I had worked with Mr. Morgan and connected him with Nicholas Singh, so I am optimistic and hopeful that another resolution might be reached as it pertains to the delineators. In terms of our team specifically, right now, legislation is back in session, and we are currently actively pursuing two bills, AB 98, which is a reuse and redistribution of medical goods, which consists of walkers and wheelchairs and hospital beds, and AB 52, which is the greenhouse gas reduction and wildfire mitigation through the California Air Resources Board. So fast and furious, certainly up at the Capitol. Locally, in terms of our district team, we are knee-deep in unemployment issues, and it is unfortunate that right now the new PEUX program has not yet rolled out, so we do have a lot of constituents that are floating in limbo. I would offer that if there's anybody that does need assistance as it relates to their unemployment or cannot connect with somebody from the unemployment office, they are welcome to give our team a call, and we are happy to assist. And I'm happy to offer my contact information if needed. And that wraps it up for us.
Outstanding. And do any board members have any questions?
No, thank you for coming.
Thank you, Jen, definitely encouraging.
Absolutely, thank you for having me.
I'm sorry, one thing. Can we add the phone number into the minutes so anybody looking at it has the phone number handy so they can contact?
What's the best phone number to get a hold of you at, Jen? Well,
absolutely, ma'am. 925-513-0411. And I'm absolutely happy to assist.
Thank you.
You're so welcome.
Okay, do we have any members or any representative from Supervisor Dan Burgess's office?
Hi, it's Leah Castleberry. Good to hear your voices.
You too, Leah.
Hopefully I get to you soon. So tonight I'm just going to touch quickly on redistricting. That's going to be coming up this year. The county is still waiting on the census data, which will help define the maps and how the districts will be drawn. And we're hoping to receive that data in March. So the county will be holding public meetings in the near future, and we'll be sure to keep you posted as this develops. I don't think this will really affect Discovery Bay much, but it's still something that's going to be big and for our county, and I'll be sure to keep you posted on that. And then quickly on COVID and the vaccine. So as you guys know, last week, the regional stay-at-home order impacting the Bay Area was lifted along with the statewide curfew. Contra Costa County is now in the purple tier due to the announcement from Governor Newsom. The purpose of the state's regional stay-at-home order was to slow COVID-19 transmission to protect the ICU bed capacity of hospitals and healthcare systems from overwhelming medical surge. Some of the following activities can resume with modifications now that Contra Costa County is back in the purple tier. Restaurants may offer outdoor dining, hair salons, barber shops, personal services such as nail salons,
outdoor social gatherings involving 25 or fewer are now permitted. So vaccines. Contra Costa County residents who are 65 years old or older can now get safe, effective COVID-19 vaccine at no cost to them from Contra Costa Health Services. Contra Costa will continue to prioritize people in the phase 1A and people 75 and older. County residents who are 65 or older and have already requested appointments do not need to make new appointments. Contra Costa Health Services will contact you soon with information about scheduling your appointment. Health Services vaccinations are by appointment only. Please do not visit our community immunization clinics without an appointment. There is no extra or leftover vaccine available at our clinic. Health Services follows the process for ensuring that no doses are wasted. To request an appointment, eligible residents can use our online form or contact the call center and is available from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Some counties, like Alameda County, are not expanding eligibility to the 65 to 74 year old age group because they do not have the capacity to handle that added volume. So this is just Contra Costa that is doing this. Contra Costa County has announced a goal to distribute 1 million doses of COVID-19 vaccine by July 4th. This new goal reflects what we in the county and our healthcare partners can do. If the state can supply enough vaccine, Health Services and our partners together will soon have capacity to provide up to 9,000 doses of vaccine daily. With anticipated contributions from other health systems in the community, we are confident that Contra Costa can achieve its million dose goal by July 4th. And that will conclude my report, unless there's any questions.
Leah, I had a quick question. Is there any correlation between the number of vaccines and how the county will be lifting their restrictions? Do you know?
Yeah. So the state is going to continue to monitor us, and as our case rate goes down, the tiers will be moved down to the next tier. So they watch us for two weeks. They watch us to see where our numbers are reflecting, and then the state puts us down to the next tier. Right now, our case rate, I think, is kind of level right now. We're not increasing, but not really decreasing right now, but that's due to the recent holidays that we had, at least that's what I'm told, but we do anticipate for those numbers to drop soon.
Thank you. Any board members have any questions?
Nope. Good to hear from you, Leah.
Good to hear from you. Hear from you. I hope to see you guys soon. Take care.
You too. Thank you.
Bye.
Hey, do we have a sheriff office report?
Good evening. Mark Thompson with Tampa Sheriff's Office, Delta Station. So we are still dealing with the COVID-19 stuff. I think most of my deputies at the station have gotten their first dose of their vaccine, which is a good thing because we're coming to contact with a lot of people during the month. January was a very busy month for us in Discovery Bay. We had 347 calls for service. We took 41 reports. We are seeing an increase, again, in property crimes, specifically auto burglaries and thefts from vehicles, where maybe somebody leaves their doors unlocked and somebody comes in the middle of the night and takes stuff out of the car. We're also still seeing a bunch of shoplifting at CVS and Safeway. Both stores are working with us pretty closely, which is nice. They're calling us when they see anybody suspicious. Anybody that they knew has stolen before, they'll call us ahead of time. So they're doing a fantastic job. We just actually caught somebody today at the CVS because they were able to call right away and we had somebody in the area. So I had Crime Analysis do a report for us for the last 3 months and try to determine what days and times where we see the most thefts, the most property crimes. So they determined that typically Thursday, Friday, and Saturday mornings from 3 a.m. to 8 a.m. is where we see most of our auto burglaries and a lot of our thefts. So what we've done, our resident deputies on different days have switched their schedule to try to cover that time. Some of the deputies that work different beats during those times, I moved over to Discovery Bay, so we have a high presence and high visibility in that area during those times. In general, I'm putting extra deputies in Discovery Bay. Our county, our sheriff's department, we have a specialized unit called our J team, and they're a proactive team. They typically work out in Richmond, Pittsburgh area. This last week, and hopefully the next 2 weeks, I'm going to have them working in Discovery Bay as well. On top of that, I pick one or two days out of the week, and I put two deputies on overtime. They double up in the car, and their job is to stay around the Sandy Cove Shopping Center, being visible, stopping cars, stopping anybody suspicious. So we're going to see how that works, because we're going to have a lot of people out there. Some of the big stuff that happened in January, it was the one of the things was the Starbucks incident that happened on the 18th of this month. Real quick, basically, we don't know why he came here. Suspect comes here, parks over at the Safeway gas station, has a gun, starts walking around the shopping center, and this is like 5:45 in the morning, ends up going into the Starbucks with a gun and starts waving it around. The employees were able to get out through the back door at that time. A customer who was in the store ran into the one in the bathroom and locked the door. So when we got the call, we didn't know the employees had gotten out, and we were told that he was holding all the employees and the customers hostage. Once we got on scene, surrounded the property, we soon learned that the employees were able to get out, and we just had one of the customers still locked in the bathroom. After about an hour, the suspect ended up coming outside to the back door. We sent a team in to get the customer out of the bathroom and took that suspect into custody. He was a convicted felon on parole for kidnapping. Shouldn't have had the gun. We ended up finding the gun inside the store, inside one of the toilets. Apparently, he dumped it in there before he came out the back door. A few days later, we got a report of shoplift at the CVS. I guess this guy went into the Safeway first, went into the CVS. CVS employees called us. By the time our deputies got there, the suspect was standing over by the Safeway gas station. They made contact with him. Searched him, had nothing on him, was very cooperative, admitted to the theft. Well, they found a backpack of his a little further away behind the store. When they opened it up, they found the backpack contained a gun. When the suspect saw that we found the gun, he took off running. We were going through neighborhoods. We ended up calling a helicopter and a couple of canine units. Did a search for about an hour, could not find him. What he ultimately did was he hid inside somebody's boat and was there for 2 days. After 2 days, he came out, started walking around. The neighbor calls and says, hey, this guy looks suspicious. Deputy showed up on scene and recognized him. Hey, this is the guy that ran from the other night. So he was taken into custody as well. Again, a convicted felon, should have had a gun. We don't know why he was in town or how he even got there, because he didn't have a car in the area. We did have a pursuit that came through. One of our deputies noticed a car driving suspiciously through town. She goes to stop it, car takes off. They get the speed of about 120 miles per hour down Highway 4 into Big Point, where the car spins out and crashes. They end up taking the person into custody. So they asked him, well, why'd you run? Well, he thought the car was stolen, but the car was not reported stolen. So he did all that for really nothing. Last Thursday, it was raining. It was late. I think it was about 10, 11 o'clock. We get a weird call of a shots fired call over in the country club area. And we had multiple callers reporting that they were hearing gunshots. And some people were reporting that there was two people walking down the street firing a gun in the air. Our first deputy got on scene within 4 minutes. And didn't see anything. We ended up having four or five more units show up. We searched the area, couldn't find anything. We talked to a few other people on scene. They didn't hear anything. So after an extensive search, they ended up clearing. The deputies went back for the next day, this last Friday morning. We did find some shell cases in the area and some unspent 9mm rounds. So we collected those. We sent those to the crime lab to see if they're connected with anything else. But that's just kind of a weird call that we have, and we hadn't made it. We don't have any more info on that. And real quick, we got a couple of drug arrests, a couple of warrant arrests. And then we had another weird call where somebody off of Pelican Court woke up and saw there was a duck shot through their wall, near the front door. So they checked their cameras, and sure enough, a car comes around at 2 in the morning, stops in front of their house, and it takes off immediately. So we're checking our ALPR cameras now to see if we can hopefully get a plate for that car. And our detectives are working on that as well, see if we come up with a suspect in that case. But other than that, I don't have anything else.
Wow.
Isn't that enough, Lieutenant Johnson? Well, I'm glad we could keep you busy.
This is Director Graham. I have one question for you. What are you seeing as the results of having the plate readers up? Are you making any stops or any arrests from the license plate readers?
Yes. So as a matter of fact, last night, one of our proactive units was out there, and we got an ALPR tip from a kidnapping suspect who was wanted from Pittsburgh PD. We saturated the area. We didn't find it, but they looked at the picture of the car, and it stood out because it had some different kind of rims on it. Well, today, deputy's driving by, and he passes the car, and he says, hey, that's the same car I saw in the picture last night that tripped our camera. It made a U-turn, and sure enough, it was the suspect that Pittsburgh PD was looking for kidnapping. And that was a direct result of the cameras that we have out there.
Excellent.
Great.
Well, Jen, on behalf of the board and the town, we really appreciate all the hard work you and your team have been doing. We know it's crazy times, but it sounds like you're getting some great results, so thank you.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much. And also, I'll just mention real quick that the PSEC made a recommendation about using some of the funds for tolls and whatnot. I'm just waiting for our sheriff to sign off on that. So hopefully we can use some of that and even put more extra people on patrol. Especially during those times at night when I think most of these crimes are happening.
You said that was between 3 p.m. and 8 a.m.? Was that the times?
3 a.m.
8 a.m.
Yeah.
I'm in bed then.
I mean, they're happening off,
Sure you are.
Where they're finding hope that crimes are occurring.
Likely excuse.
Thank you, Ted Johnson. Do we have anyone from the CHP? Office.
Officer Thomas, how you guys doing?
Hey.
Hello, everybody. Hey, Officer Thomas with the High Patrol, Contra Costa area. The staff that we have out here that I was able to find for, the month of January of this year, arrest-wise, I'll start with arrest-wise like always. For DUI under alcohol, looks like there was 6 arrests under the influence of alcohol. Looks like 2 arrests for DUI under the influence of drugs, probably more like the marijuana. Had that 1 warrant arrest, 1 arrest for a hit and run collision, 1 arrest for reckless driving, and 1 arrest for driving on a suspended license for DUI. Citation wise, and this is, I added up the all the areas, right, Fixler Road and everything in Discovery Bay. It looked like there was 14 sites for speed, 2 for registration, 2 equipment violations, 2 right-of-way violations, 3 unsafe passing, looks like 6 verbal warnings, six written warnings were given, a stop sign violation, and yes, and that's citation-wise, that's all there is. See here. I heard the delineators gonna get relooked at, and hopefully that'll work out great. I know that it's kind of an eyesore and stuff, so it sounds like someone's involved, that's cool. I did get a call, I went last week. It was, shocker, reckless driving, red Durango over in the Syntex Homes area, Regatta area. I was doing donuts, I tracked the kid down. Had a good talking to, gave him some paper that he gets to hang on with and have to pay for some stuff later. But If you see a red Durango doing stuff, call the office. If I'm working and I hear it, usually I'll go out there and I'll try to hunt that down. Just because it gets annoying, you know, and the kids get away with it, they'll just continue to do it. I think this kid's very educated to not do that again in the area, so that'll be great. The rain and the COVID, that's kind of hampered some activity a little bit. We do have that multi-jurisdiction thing starting back up. I talked to you guys about it before in the past. When we do the areas where I have, usually it's Pittsburgh, Antioch, Brentwood, Oakley, are the cities that are involved, you know, the East County cities. And then usually about every 2 weeks on a Wednesday we're doing it. And then about once every third time we're doing it, usually it's usually it's an afternoon. And I try to bring the guys out, spread them out, you know, a couple in Discovery Bay, and just float around out there. So we're doing that. You see some, different departments out there. That's what we're doing. Usually when we're going to do that, I'll give Lieutenant Johnson a heads up so the SO can get involved, because it's nice to have more people out there. Presence puts a good image out there, especially if people want to try to do crimes or traffic violations. It deters them. That is it. You should hopefully, we have some officers that have been on break-in for a while. They're getting close to their end, I believe. Beginning in February, beginning of March, they should be getting off their break-in. So hopefully we can get these guys out on the road. I pass it on to the A shift. Officer Hammerson does a pretty good job at going out, hitting Discovery Bay area. I know last week I kind of hit the Newport, Clipper, Discovery Bay, Willow Lake area. He went out there with me for a little bit. Some of the Fixler Road area as well. And then the afternoon guys, they keep rotating, so I'm trying to get someone that's locked on board to kind of go out and help out as well. So hopefully you'll start seeing a little bit more of a presence of CHP out there. It'd be great. You guys have any questions or anything you'd like me to try to answer or pass on?
I'm seeing shaking heads no.
There you go.
Officer, we do appreciate it, though.
Absolutely, guys. If you have anything, you guys have my email, I believe. So just hit me with an email, and I can be able to address that for you guys. So too.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Take
Thanks.
Care.
Stay safe.
Do we have anyone from the East Contra Costa Fire District online?
Good evening, Barb. It's John, Chief McNumber here.
Hey.
How you doing, sir?
Good evening. So for tonight, I'm going to give you a brief operational report for both December and January, since we weren't on the agenda because of the holidays. And I do know that we are scheduled on item G of this board agenda tonight. Chief Helmick is in attendance tonight, and he will be discussing item G and all things related to annexation. All right, so for the month of December, there were 59 calls in Discovery Bay, which had a response time of 10:30. Happy to report no major incidents on our side. In the month of January, there were 58 calls and an average response time of 12 minutes. Again, both no major incidents in Discovery Bay, so that's a good thing. District-wide in December, the district ran 691 calls for service with an average response time of 8:27. That included responding to 10 residential fires, 5 vehicle fires, 4 vegetation fires, and 21 exterior fires. District also responded to 26 vehicle accidents with an additional 8 requiring rescue, 1 vehicle versus pedestrian, and 2 bicycle accidents. In January, the district responded to 711 calls with an response time of 8:41. That included responding to 5 residential fires, 2 commercial fires, 6 vehicle fires, 1 vegetation fire, and 18 exterior fires. District also responded to 14 vehicle accidents, additional 9 requiring rescue, and 2 motorcycle accidents. One of the things, just to keep the topic going, is all things COVID. Right now, the district has had members over the last 2 months contract COVID. Fortunately, they have all not become seriously ill, and most are back to work. Additionally, and to echo Leah Castleberry, which is saying, about the the COVID numbers in the county. According to some earlier meetings today, the numbers have stalled out, and they are projecting that they drop here in the near future. So that is a good thing. Additionally, vaccination sites are being stood up across the county, and your East Contra Costa firefighters are in support of some future vaccination sites that will be stood up in the Eastern Brentwood area at the LMC Extension Campus. Some of those that are coming up are in the next couple weeks. They are by appointment only, so please do not show up in your personal vehicles. If you don't have an appointment, you will be turned away, and that's purely due to the limited amount of vaccines that we're receiving at this time. There is hope, and like Leah said earlier, that we start getting these vaccines more and more in the county, and we can ramp up these vaccination sites. So again, we're supporting it. We'll have some of our firefighters there participating in multiple positions, but it is a county-wide, county fire district-wide, Contra Costa Sheriff, local PD. We are all in this together trying to get these vaccination sites up and running to get as many citizens vaccinated as possible. Another big thing we're working on is we're going to be upstaffing a squad, or what is also known as a light unit. We are doing this to help alleviate some of the call volume that our three crews are running. For those of you in the audience who aren't too familiar with our district, we are only a three-station, three-engine district, and we severely need more. Putting up this fourth unit is only a bridge, though. This bridge is between now and the time we can upstaff a full fourth engine company. We have the means to get a fourth engine company up. We do not have the bodies right now. So we have to go through a hiring process and a promotional process to get enough bodies to be able to upstaff a desperately needed fourth engine company. But in that meantime, we're going to upstaff a light unit on an overtime basis with two personnel to help run EMS calls throughout the district. We're working on our policies and procedures on what that looks like, and we have a tentative go-live date of March 1st, but we still have some complexities to work through. Why this is important to Discovery Bay is this: while this unit isn't going into Discovery Bay, it'll be in the Oakley area where the largest chunk of call volume is. This unit being up will cause less distances of Discovery Bay's engines moving into the Brentwood and Oakley area for either coverage or for secondary or tertiary calls. So your engine in your area will stay there more often with this unit up, and especially when it finally transitions into a fourth engine company sometime in the late fall, early winter, due to the hiring processes and the timelines. It's, again, desperately needed and keeps the engine in your area there more often. Other than that, running our firefighters through their own vaccinations, most of us have either received one or two doses already, so that's all going well right now, and trying to get all our personnel the protection they need. Again, Chief Helmick will be discussing shortly about annexation with the Contra Costa County Fire District, and I just want to remind everybody that, again, the second Wednesday of every month, 6:30 p.m., is our monthly fire board meeting. I encourage you all to attend. There you'll get more goings-ons in the district, and Chief Helmick will be giving periodic updates on the annexation via the fire board meeting. Again, 6:30 p.m., second Wednesday of every month, and you can live stream that through our website. I am complete with my report and available for questions.
Hey, I just wanted to acknowledge your taking your new mascot on the ride with you today that you guys picked up over there at one of your calls. I was reading a story about how you picked up a stray dog and it ended up going on a 911 call with you before it got to the vet. So well done on the humanitarian side also.
Yeah, that was a great story.
I will relay the thanks. And well, that just goes to show you how busy we are too. I mean, our guys do the right thing and pick up a stray dog to take to the vet. Get called.
That's right. That's right.
Beast right there.
Well, as a dog lover, thanks.
Hopefully you don't get inundated with 911 calls for people needing to take their dogs to the vet.
Yeah, right? A new service.
Exactly. Yeah, I did see the new truck. It looks great. It was driving around town the other day.
Yeah, those came out really nice. Our apparatus committee They did an outstanding job of getting those things designed, and they were put into service between September and November of last year. And we couldn't be happier with how they turned out. They just they came out really awesome.
Well, that's good to hear. Well, we appreciate the report, sir.
Sorry, Mr.
Thank you,
Chair.
Have a good night.
Rod. Sorry, Mr. Chair. This is Rod Atterbury, and I just would be remiss as a dog lover and trainer if I didn't say thank you, like Kevin did.
Thanks,
that's
Rod.
That's what you pay legal counsel for.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, let's go on to G1, Business and Action Items. Actually, we're going to change it around and go to
G2
first.
Thank you to address item G2. Before you are two resolutions. One of the resolutions involves Measure X, which was a half-cent sales increase passed by the voters back in November 3rd, 2020, that should put about $81 million estimated into the county's general fund. And this resolution would be our board's support that a certain amount of Measure X money be directed to East Contra Costa Fire Protection District. And then the other resolution is supporting a consolidation effort between our fire district and the county fire district in order to improve services out here. And with that said, I believe Fire Chief Helmick's on the line and could speak in greater detail regarding these two issues and encouraging our support through resolution. Chief Helmick?
Good evening. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
All right. Well, good evening. Good evening, President Gateau and fellow directors. Again, my name is Brian Helmick. I'm the Fire Chief of the East Contra Costa Fire Protection District. And I want to start off by just thanking you for entertaining the idea of supporting these two resolutions that are in front of you tonight. Those of you that have been monitoring the fire district, as Chief McCumber previously stated, is that we have three fire stations in service today. We have an existing three-station deficit, and we know over the next 20 years of growth, we're going to need at least an additional three fire stations to provide adequate fire protection. We have been working for the past 4 years to not only retool the fire district, but also seek all ways of which we can receive additional revenue through either partnerships with the land use agencies, the City of Brentwood, Oakley, and the county, and or alternative means through state initiatives, county initiatives, and in last worst case situation, going out for either parcel tax or benefit assessment. The district has done what I believe to be our due diligence for the past 3 years, seeking feasibility of everything. And we do have engineers' reports in place for potential benefit assessment if needed. The last item that we've been working on is the consolidation annexation feasibility study with Contra Costa County Fire. As Town Manager Davies just stated, the county also at the same time as we were working through this process, passed Measure X, which is a countywide half-cent sales tax. And when this was prior to be putting onto the ballot, there was a needs assessment done that very much highlighted the needs of fire protection, not only throughout the county, but even more so specifically within the East Contra Costa Fire Protection District. Your fire board and staff, myself and my staff, along with labor and our partner agencies, we are continuing to monitor the Measure X process. The county is still working on assigning an advisory committee, identifying the bylaws of which the $81 million that it may have swelled up to approximately $100 million a year is going to be allocated and reinforced through resolution, memorandum, or process. The county is really still working through that process of how it's going to be identified and done. From my observation, what I've seen, I believe they're going to continue working through establishing this advisory board, waiting for their recommendations to go to the county board of supervisors. And they'll be making decisions near the month of June, July, and I think in the best case situation, the revenues from Measure S will start to flow sometime around August. So we are working to still be positioned and make sure that if the revenues that come through, we do what we can to reinforce the initiatives that we need here at East Contra Costa Fire. But running concurrently, and the second resolution you have in front of you is about consolidation. Consolidation is something we've explored many, many times, for decades, actually. Historically, they've been non-discussion starters. What I will tell you is the work of the fire district, led by our fire board, our elected fire board, staff, labor, even members of your own board of directors or Discovery Bay, the city councils and otherwise, we collectively as community have been working really hard to rebuild the fire district, rebrand the fire district, and demonstrate that we are not a liability, but we are an asset. We're living within our means, and we believe that we have new revenue streams that we've created over the past 4 years and making feasibility of consolidation somewhat of a reality. And so we're continuing to lean into that process. There's multiple phases of the consolidation process. I'll give you a brief overview of that, and then I'll conclude for questions. Is that there is about four. There are four phases when it comes down to consolidation. We started phase one back in August of 2020 and completed phase one in December of 2020. Phase one is a very high-level, conceptual, napkin-type process to where is it worth even going in and doing a deep dive, looking at the financials, looking at the operations? How do we bring both families together? How would this work? Is it worth even approaching LAFCO in this process? Chief Richard, which is the fire chief of Contra Costa County Fire, and myself, spent multiple months working with a consultant, and the results were favorable. They showed that in the phase one study, the preliminary findings were, with our existing revenues, the Contra Costa County Fire Protection District over 2 years could potentially, I'm going to stress the word potentially, provide five stations, four of which are sustainable long-term. The fifth one is only sustainable for about 4 years with paramedics on them, which means they can potentially provide a higher level of service to the residents of our jurisdiction with our existing revenues. Many people would pause and say, well, why is that? And the answer, frankly, is that they're a large organization. They have approximately 28 fire stations. We have three. The cost of doing business at a fully burdened rate of taking what it costs for all of our stations, we have to apply the burden of not only my position, legal counsel, insurances, apparatus, capital equipment replacement, and we divide all of the cost to run the organization over all of our stations. And so our station costs at three stations are very high. They're higher than what Contra Costa County finds on their stations that are closer to anything beyond 15 stations at Contra Costa County Fire. It gets closer to this personnel cost because there's a cost savings as you add additional stations on, so the burdens fall onto the earlier stations, but you have essentially personnel cost on later stations, and there's a economy of scale, and they have a large organization. That's what we found value. And so we found that there was interest in going into phase two. We made the recommendation to the board at the December board meeting. They approved it, and we're in the deep dive right now going to the phase two feasibility study. The complete process of the phase two feasibility studies and go from December of 2020 and should conclude around July of 2021, this July. We're hoping to have in April of 2021 a sneak peek, a preview of a draft and or what the anticipated findings will be in July. And it's hopefully at that time that the board for Contra Costa County Fire, our elected board, can make a decision at that time saying if these findings hold in July, this is something that we would move forward with and approach LAFCO. So let's make the assumption all things stay favorable in July. If the results are as positive as they were with the phase one study, and we reinforce any gaps with solutions that are amendable to both boards, they would do, our board would do a resolution of intent to dissolve the fire district and annex into Contra Costa County Fire. Contra Costa County Fire would do an intent to absorb and annex the East Contra Costa Fire Protection District into their fire district. Both those resolutions with the phase two and the phase one feasibility study and an application in addition to what is called an MSR, a Municipal Service Review Report, an updated draft, all of that would be submitted to LAFCO. That would start the phase three of the feasibility study. The phase three study is a LAFCO process. It would go from July 1 till January 1 of 2022. They would hold their public hearings. Those processes would be in cooperation with both agencies. And in January, in a perfect world, if everything is approved, they would slam the gavel and say that Contra Costa County Fire has full authority over both agencies and consolidation would be complete. The last phase four of the process, although Contra Costa County Fire has full operational authority in making all the decisions at that time, the legislative body, the board of East Contra Costa Fire would stay intact from 2 to 4 to 6 months to do legislative actions. Everything from transferring funds, transferring deeds, transferring real property, dissolving and doing the things they would need to do until the work was done and satisfied by LAFCO, and then the board would be dissolved. The last point I want to make is the reinforce. April will be a sneak peek. July should be the resolution of intent discussions. If that passes, LAFCO again from July to January of 2022. These dates, I'm going to really say this slowly, these dates are in a perfect world, which we all know we don't live, and we know that timelines are difficult to hit, but I can guarantee you that myself, my staff, our board, the adjoining fire agencies, we're leaning into this process. We all desire to provide the highest level of fire protection to the businesses and citizens of our jurisdiction with the revenues that we currently have. And we're eager to increase service levels as fast as we can. So again, I'm gonna stress the word that this is all potential, this is all possible. I'm the fire chief, I report to the board. It is at their discretion and their decision on the things to be done, ultimately LAFCO. But it is very important for you to